today I'm talking culture with Patrick, who is another accent coach that I know who was also living in Mexico at the same time as me. He just recently moved back to Canada. And so I want to talk about culture shock, what it's like kind of comparing the two places, maybe not comparing, but noticing observations and traditions and viewpoints, and even maybe a bit of like reverse culture shock for him getting back to Canada. And yes, if you've never heard that before, reverse culture shock is a thing. And I want you to listen for two things. Number one, when he starts talking about some years, think about 2015 and 16. And how does he say those numbers? And where does he put the stress? Because I find that very, very interesting. And I want to ask you why. If you think you know why he says 2015 and 16 in a different way than I just did, write back to me and tell me why you think he does that. Because obviously he's a native speaker and there's a good reason that he changes the stress there. That's number one. Number two, the interesting thing is we're going to talk about witches today. Yeah, not exactly the ones with the black pointy hat that you might be picturing from like media, but how culturally there are witches around. So stay tuned and let's get on with the show. I'm Bianca, your personal American accent coach, and I'm here to help you master an American accent in English because your voice is your choice when it comes to how you sound. I try to release a podcast episode every 2 weeks, and so you should really subscribe to whatever podcast platform you use so that you don't miss the newest episode. And by the way, if you want to see the full video of the episode, it's available at Accent Coach Bianca on YouTube. Now, let's get on with the show. Hey, Patrick, how have you been? I know you're probably still unpacking some boxes maybe and stuff like that because you just moved back to Canada. So first of all, quick, how have you been? Then I'll ask you to introduce yourself for people who might not know you.
Yeah, thank you so much for, bringing me on your podcast here, Bianca. So yeah, I just recently got back. I've been living in Mexico for 7 years from 2018 until just a couple months ago, back in March. Nicely settled now, but yeah, now there've been some changes and I'm loving it. We're having a great time.
Awesome. We'll talk a little bit about those details and changes a little bit later. But first, for people who don't know you, if you're watching this on YouTube, you might recognize Patrick's face. And if you're just listening to this, you might also recognize his voice because he also has a podcast in the accent coaching world. But I'll let you, Patrick, tell everybody about yourself.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm the host of the Accent Training Podcast. So far, I've got 275 accent training, lessons. Yeah, no, I'm blasting them out. Some of them are real short, 2-3 minutes. Some of them are over an hour. It just depends on how, what I got done that week.
Fantastic. But, and also, I don't know about you, but when I'm going through podcast episodes to listen to, sometimes I really do filter them by like how much time I have and stuff like that. So it's nice to have a variety, like that too.
Yeah.
So that's super exciting. So let's talk a little bit about, you said 7 years. You've been in Mexico, or you had been. Let's use the correct verb tense. You had been in Mexico about 7 years. That's funny because that's about how long I've been in here now. So we probably came around the same time. Can you tell us a little bit about the background of why you originally came, maybe why you stayed those 7 years, and what kind of brought you back? And if you started the accent coaching while you were here or beforehand, I don't think I actually know that.
Oh, yeah. So actually, I guess in total, it's more like 10 years because I did have 3 years prior to 2018. But anyway, no, the first time I came, I really just my whole life, I wanted to go to Mexico. And so I found some volunteering opportunities in Monterrey in about 2 hours south of Texas. And so that was great. I got there and I ended up volunteering teaching for about 6 months. And I found that I was really good at it. And I had a lot of passion for it. I remember there was going to be a class about musical instruments. And the director said, yeah, we can have the kids draw musical instruments. And I was like, that's ridiculous. We can make some maracas. We can make something. So I just got straws. And I spent all night snipping straws to make pan flutes. And then it was such a fun lesson with the kids taping the pan flutes. And they loved it.
Nice.
So stuff like that, I saw, I've got a lot of passion for it. I'm good at it. So I had better start making some money doing it. And so that's when I found another opportunity to return back to Monterey. So back in 2015, 2016, I started actually getting paid teaching, and I was doing business English. I found a lot of these people were great, like they were really well educated in English. They went to private schools. They were like, they're pretty much native English speakers in some ways, because most of their life they'd spoken English every single day, right? At least for their, schooling life. But their accent was what was getting in the way of the international calls that they had to make, and because they were working for American companies. So I started changing the direction from business English focus towards just how to pronounce things clearer. And we started with the word water. And I was like, why does the T sound like a D there? And like, it's not water, water, because I was working with this Mexican woman. That's what she was really enunciating, that E, and not contrasting the syllables at all. And so I realized, oh, okay, there's got to be, it's not equal on both syllables. There's got to be a little water. And that T, I learned how to explain it all. So from there, I just fell in love with it. And it wasn't like boring grammar lessons anymore. It was like, here's how you can move your muscles and use your English, like polish it off to get the most out of it and express yourself, confidently. So yeah, that was, now we're looking 2018, and that's going into 2018 to 2019. That's
Can I
when I
pause
made
you
a
for a second?
transition.
I'm curious about something. So when you were doing the business English and you kind of shifted the focus, were you working for like a language school or somebody else, or were you working for yourself at that time and you had the freedom to be like, you know what? I'm going to change this around.
It was a bit of both, actually. So, yeah, the language school didn't like it that I wasn't following the curriculum, but I was like, this is so boring. Like, I was just, it was so droll, everything. And it's like just too many details to be going through your head when you're, trying to communicate, like just
I
pass,
see.
relay information along. And
Yeah,
so it was like,
exactly.
hey guys, let's get into actually using this stuff. So I actually, that was at a transitionary period initially where I was able to start, I guess you could say I kind of poached a couple of clients from that particular like Mexican local language school. And just people started working with me one-on-one. And so that was interesting. I was getting ripped off. Like, I was ripping myself off big time now that I see. I had no idea what I was doing. But it was the adventure, right? And being, whatever, 21 years old, who cares money-wise? You don't need much.
And the reason I'm asking is because, like, because you know, I have a group for teachers, English teachers, who want to pivot and do what we do. And this is so often the case of what I hear. I had the same problem myself. I was working at language schools, you know, I worked at a high school too. And like, you have to follow the book, you have to follow their curriculum. But then you notice how, like, oh, okay, it's helpful, but there's so many other things that can be really effective. You know, like you said, let's just focus on syllable stress a bit more. And if you do that, guess what? All your syllables are going to sound better. And that means that probably you're going to have a better rhythm as well. Things like this. So I think the idea that you also said, like, I was ripping myself off, you know, as a teacher and the pay that we get, it's often kind of a race to the bottom, right? You'll work anywhere, you'll work three different jobs and the pay is crap. And at the same time, you're like, am I really helping people as much? Because I can see what they need, you know? And so I think trying to encourage more English teachers to work in our field is something that I'm always trying to like expose a little bit and say, hey, you know what? There's another way to do this. So that's what I wanted to say. And I was trying to remember, can we back up a second too, before we get back to like 2018? Where did you and I meet? Was that back in the Clubhouse days? Do you remember? I was trying to
Oh
recall.
yeah, that was actually, that was just around when I started even becoming as independent, like, really taking a step towards bringing in my own clients and just getting my voice out there in the internet. Yeah, pretty much in 2020, 2021, actually, beginning of 2021, I believe.
So a little bit later then. Yeah, that makes sense. Well, let's see. COVID was like 2020-ish, 2021, but I think we met before that because I remember it was definitely before COVID because I wasn't even in this house where I am now. So I remember it's been a while. And then you started your podcast, which is what I remember too. But bring it back to Mexico because at that time you were in Mexico. So in this beginning time when you're like noticing, ways that you can help people. You're like, I don't need to work for other people. I can work for myself. I'm going to transition my job. I'm going to help people more in this way. I'm curious, you said that you had been down here before and that you had always wanted to live in Mexico. So what was it about Mexico or the culture or something about that? Was there anything that kind of pulled you here?
The one thing was definitely that the girls are very pretty. A lot of like beautiful, beautiful ladies in Mexico. And that was my wife, definitely. That's what led to me getting married, of course. A classic story, right? And then, yeah, no, from there, it was like for the whole last 7 years, that's what kept me there. Even when it felt like I really, like I was feeling like I wanted to go back to Canada at times, like it was like, well, I got a family here now. I gotta, you know.
Right, because now you
And
have a
my wife
child.
was starting her medical career. And so at that time, it was like, we've got to really commit to her schooling, commit to her social service, because new doctors had have to do a 1 year, social service for the government. So they sent us way out to the middle of the desert. And that was such an awesome adventure. It was amazing.
I was going to ask you about that. How, what was that like? Because remind me where you lived, or I guess multiple places too. I don't know if you were in Monterrey, but you were also near Aguascalientes, I think, too. Where did you live
Oh, well, that was
before
Querétaro
the
for a little
before
bit.
that? Querétaro, right? You're in Querétaro.
Yeah. So kind of
So
on the
maybe.
other side of Mexico City there. Yeah. So
Right,
it's,
right.
yeah, well, my in-laws have houses. They've got properties down in Querétaro. So it was a common thing. It was like a 10-hour ride, drive. So it was like, all right, if we start early, you can just drive down there. And it's a beautiful city. Oh my God, Querétaro, it's so much fun. It's a cool place because once you're there, that's where all the cool cultural stuff of Mexico is. So you get there and it's like 1 hour to go see some pyramids, 1 hour to Mexico City, 1 hour to Cholula, like all these awesome places to visit. That was awesome. And we would be in and out of there now and then, but mostly I was up in Monterey and then just living all around the city because it's got all the municipalities, Apodaca and Guadalupe. And then in the desert, that was on, like, I don't know, do you know, like, the Carretera Matehuala? It's like north of like San Luis Potosi, if you know that. It's like the highway where it goes from Nuevo Leon and then it kind of goes through Coahuila and then it goes into San Luis. It's that highway there.
Major like north-south route then.
North south, yeah, exactly. And we were at the most southern point of Nuevo Leon. And it was like we were a good 45 minutes off the highway. So it was a highway and where it's just all, they'd call it estepe. So it's not quite desert, but it's kind of in between, bushy
Very
desert, you could say, very
scrubland,
prickly.
maybe.
It started to get, because really in that area, there's some big problems with the narcos these days. They've got a lot of power over the highways all around, everything outside of Monterrey and Nuevo León. It's out of government control, pretty much. Like, it's, oh goodness. And so, this highway, there started to be some big issues there. There was actually a territory dispute going on. And it was like, oh God. And so, yeah, we were just hearing stories of, these shootouts in this next town, shootouts over there. And so, we were like, all right, we're going to try to, see if we can get out of here. Because we had a baby with us. My wife had a baby out there.
You had the baby when she was doing her social service in the
Yeah,
small town? Oh, I didn't realize that it
exactly.
was at the same time. Wow. So with the newborn too.
Yeah, like she did get about 12 weeks off, maternity leave kind of thing for a couple weeks.
But still, yeah.
But
That's where you were at that time. Very interesting.
it had its blessings because it was outside of Monterey, outside of, the pollution, the just the craziness of the city. But then also, okay, the things that would freak me out there was the witches. This was where I was like, yeah, right, I was caught off guard. So I
Hold on.
would.
Just to be clear for people who are listening audio only, you said witches, right? As in witches and
Witches.
warlocks.
Yeah, oh, like magic
Continue.
casting spells and turning
This
into
is
the chusas. And they
Okay.
had.
Okay. We might need some, yeah, we might need some translation of the colorful stuff here. So go back and say, like, because you just kind of threw that huge bomb on the
Oh,
table. And
yeah,
he was
no.
like, oh, the thing that surprised me was the witches. Like, wait, what?
Yeah, no, right? Big
Explain.
surprise. So I would hear stories from the locals in the town, and they would talk about how witches turn into owls, but these big, giant, 5-foot-tall owls called the lechusa. And they sit up in high in the trees, and when you walk by at night, they go psh, psh, and it's really creepy. And
Okay.
some they say that those are witches, and they're watching you, and they eat babies. You know, they do kind of
Yikes.
witchcraft with babies, stuff like that. So I was like, oh, perfect, we got a baby out here. We'd go back to Monterey, and you know, we've
Which
got
is a large city. For people who don't know, right?
yeah,
Monterey is a huge city. And
metropolis.
so,
10
yeah.
million population. And you know, my wife's a doctor. We hang around a lot of well-educated people there. And out in the country, you know, okay, superstitious country
Wow,
bumpkin
yeah.
type folk. We ask people with PhDs. I'm asking other people about, you know, they're telling me about witches down in like Matehuala. Have you heard anything about that? Those are just stories, right? Everybody says, no, there's witches out there, all right. Or else, you know, like,
Wow.
yeah, someone's like, you know what? Just don't worry about it. You know, you've got God with you. Go with God. You'll be okay. Like, there is apparently common knowledge in Monterey that Matehuala is where the witches hang out.
That's where they hang out.
So,
Oh, how interesting. Oh, that
yeah.
I bet that you maybe you like me was like, "Wait, what are we talking about here? Is this really what you mean?" You know, 'cause it was kind of a shock to hear you just drop that suddenly like that. So, what a culture shock, I imagine.
Well, that was because yeah, that was. But in my mind, I'm thinking about it from different perspectives because I'm thinking, okay, well, my wife's a doctor. Chances are, you know, any witch, you know, worth whatever witches are worth,
Yeah, are they worth
worth their
salt? I don't know.
wort,
Do they know
any
information?
witch worth
Yeah,
their wort
exactly.
knows a thing or two about medicine, you know, or has an appreciation for medicine and herbology and stuff. So there's no way that they're gonna, if anything, they would want to be protecting a doctor. You know, there's no. So when you think about it logically, it's like, all right, if there are witches, we're not likely their target. But.
They're not going after you, even though you have a baby. Yeah,
And so what we would do is when we would walk outside with the baby, we would put my cowboy hat on him too, so that the witches wouldn't see him. It would, you know, be a decoy. So it
Good
was just
thinking.
little things that we were like, might as well. It was what the locals recommended, and we were like, all right, you know what?
When in Rome, or not Rome, but yeah, like to know. And you don't even know a lot of those things until you're there on the like boots on the ground, let's say, right? So you wouldn't have learned. I don't know if you knew about a lot of Mexican cultural things before you even came here, but that's not likely something you were going to hear about before you got here. So I'm really curious, what other things did you maybe know ahead of time and be like, oh, okay, I'm going to Mexico. This is how I'm going to prepare myself. Or what things also maybe kind of like surprised you while you were here?
Okay, what surprised me? I was never once nobody attempted to rob me once. Nobody attempted to pick my pockets. In
Me neither.
fact, I had people comment, I look too careless. They're like, hey man, there's people around here who are gonna steal your stuff. Like, you know, you wanna zip your bag up or you wanna, you know. And so I find the thought that people have that, oh, you go to Mexico City, you're gonna get robbed, you're gonna get this. It does happen, and I've heard many stories of people getting robbed, but it's not. I lived in Mexico for 10 years. I didn't get robbed once. That was literally, I was anticipating it. I would bring r money on me in case someone wanted to rob me.
Right,
Just to
decoy
get
money sometimes, like an old
like
phone. A lot of people
insurance.
do that. Absolutely, yeah. And it's like
Yeah.
I'm from, I've lived in big cities also, like on the East Coast of the US, and like I have a pretty good sense of what's going on around me. I have a pretty good like spidey sense, a tingly ping
Yep.
when things are going down. But yeah, I've never once had my spidey sense tingle while I was here, and I find that a lot of people are like, oh, don't go out after dark, don't go in this area or these tracks, and they could totally be right, but I've never ex had that experience either, like you. So I'm also wondering, of course it happens, but I wonder if it happens to the degree that people are as nervous about, or if that just keeps them inside so that things don't happen as often. Do you know what I mean? Like, I wonder what the correlation is there.
And I'll bet it's even seasonal too, right? Like certain seasons, I'll bet there's a higher amount of thefts and robberies and stuff. And And it's
right
just,
around Christmas, definitely. Yeah, people are walking around with cash, and a lot of times people, at least in Guadalajara where I live, they're like, "Oh, don't go to this neighborhood; it's very poor," right? But I know that people get robbed in the richer areas. Like, I know that that's where kidnappings happen, is in the really, really more expensive areas. And so I know people who've been robbed in broad daylight because they went to the ATM machine. ATM machine, that's kind of redundant, but they went to the ATM, they took out cash because it was around Christmas, and of course they're walking down the street, and that's when things happen, But like you were saying, I think awareness is really key, just in case, have your things about you, have your wits about you, let's say, and know what's going on too.
Yeah, no, and that's where coming back here, I still am getting over it because I'd constantly be looking over my shoulder in Mexico because just being an obvious foreigner, looking like a white guy walking around, honestly, usually like pink and red just because of the sun. But like I'd stand out literally like a sore thumb, right? So the walking around like that, like I did feel that, like I would get looks from people regularly. I knew I looked out of place, but there came a point where I just got used to it, kind of thing. It's like, people are always looking at me funny. But then at the same time, that would always have me on guard, kind of. It would always have me anticipating this person's looking at me. They might attack me, or this person, I got to keep an eye on this guy. But like I said, that was never the case. And so now getting back here, I mean, there are some definitely some areas of this city. Like I go out running and I see where, you got the areas with junkies and stuff like that that you want to have your wits about you, like you said.
Wait. I want to pause you for a quick second. When you say when I got back here, can you explain for the listeners where's here right now?
Oh, here is Calgary. So now I'm in Calgary, Canada. And I'm just saying here there's a lower risk, or at least you feel that there's a lower risk of being robbed, being kidnapped, something like that. And so walking around here, just I'm able to let my guard down. I don't have to, I don't feel I have to be looking over my shoulder constantly, or I can let my son run around, more than 5 feet ahead of me. Like, and I'm
And
not
the norms are
constantly
different.
hovering.
Yeah, exactly. And you might notice the signs. Certain signs are for certain places, right? Like, I'll give you an example. I was living in upstate New York in Albany, and when I was younger, and I took pepper spray often with me. And I was walking home one night from a friend's house, very close, just a few blocks away. And for some reason, I had the pepper spray in my bag with my keys because it was on my keychain. I used to just hold it in my hand as I walked at night. And for some reason, it was in my bag, right? Well, there, I was walking on the sidewalk and I see a guy, pretty big guy, crossing the street at an angle. And I just noticed, I'm like, this is kind of like an intercept angle, And I just remember thinking, this is a sign, bells go off, blah, 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 red lights. And sure enough, he did. He tried to attack me, but I kind of knew, I knew the sign, right? I got away, everything was fine, but I knew that that was a sign there. Now, here, when I'm on the street at night, do I kind of notice in the corner of my eye behind me, like what angle somebody is crossing the street at? Are they crossing the street to cross the street? Are they crossing the street because they're coming towards me? That kind of thing. And I feel like here, at least in Guadalajara, in my city, you kind of watch out for the corners of the street because that's where people can, in cars, can stop. I had a friend who was robbed that way. So there was a group of people, and it was a group, and then there was a group in the car, and they paused to cross the street. They were walking, and the car kind of just, stopped at the corner. The guys got out. They robbed them. I had a friend who kind of noticed the signs, and she ran the other way. But everybody else, the guys who were left there, they were all mugged, And then, so you kind of know like the signs of each place, maybe a little bit. So I'm sure that your warning bells would go off with certain things, right? But you're back in that like attuned mode for those things, I'm guessing. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not that it's not dangerous, but it's different things that maybe you're watching out for. Like you mentioned drug addicts, right? Like, I don't know about in Monterrey, but here there's not so many drug addicts as I think there are in Calgary just sitting on the streets. So I
Everywhere.
wouldn't know how to kind of interact with somebody just to lessen the likelihood that something might happen. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no, I totally, yeah, I get that. I just wanted to comment something you mentioned about, bells go off. And I love, great idiom there, right? Like it's like you something just makes you alarm off in your head. That happened to me on our way out of Mexico. So when we were leaving, we were driving. We drove all the way up, and
Wow. Mm-hmm.
leaving through the border in Reynosa, was it Reynosa? No, it was Laredo, was where we crossed through. And so there, I accidentally got into the wrong line, like kind of the fast pass line or whatever, you
Oh,
know,
yeah.
whatever. People who have a certain sticker can go through the
You
regulars.
didn't realize.
And I got screwed up. And so I was just following the GPS. And then I had to get, like, there was a transit officer there who just kind of helped, you know, he's like gave me, you know, the directions to turn around. And then he asked me, oh, you know, do you have your license? And I pull it out, my license, and he just takes it out of my hand. I was like, oh God, no, what's he gonna do? That's when the bells go off, right? And anybody listening, if a Mexican officer tries to take your license, don't just give it to them.
Oh,
They
I
will
wasn't
try.
aware of this. Why
They'll
not? What could happen if you
Oh,
hand
well,
over
because
your
they'll
license?
use it as leverage to get a bribe out of you, right? And
Oh, because
so
you
what
want it
I
back.
Because
Okay.
you want it back. You're not going anywhere without your license. And they're going to use anything that they possibly can to try to, you know, catch you up and get a little money out of you. And so,
I never thought of that,
yeah,
huh?
exactly. This particular officer just told me, okay, meet me at the curb over there. And so I was like, oh, okay, whatever. And I drove over. He had my license in his hand. And I just told him, like, I know it's illegal for you to take my license. I took it out of his hand. Like, I told him in Spanish. I just took it out of his hand and kept on driving. But I did not rip it right out. Just, I was in the driver's seat, yoink, off I go. And that's where I've developed a new, like, I realized a lot of police officers in Mexico are not well-trained police officers. Like, in Canada, I know the process to become a police officer here. Most people get denied, you know, because they invest a lot in a serious police force in this country. And when I first arrived in Mexico, that's what I expected. Leaving Mexico, I'm like, I just ripping my license out of their hand and passing on. Like, I've learned that they don't take their job seriously. They're just thugs with a badge, you know, a license to be a thug in daylight. Maybe not all Mexican police officers, but definitely the ones I encountered.
Oh yeah, I never even thought about the thing about the license, and I didn't know that it was illegal for them to hold on to it too. Yeah, because you would think in the US they often, pull over, roll down license and
Oh, well,
registration,
no,
right? And
so
you hand it over.
it's not, it's more that you don't have to give it to them.
Okay,
If
just
you
show.
give it to them, they're not going to give it back until you paid them money. That's the thing. What I have learned to do is show it to them. You know, show it to them. I can hold it up and let you look at it. Look close if you like, sir. But I would not give a Mexican police officer my license to hold on to.
Oh, that's very interesting, right?
Yeah,
Because
I
what does he
definitely
need it
wouldn't do
for? It's
that again.
probably not like the squad cars that we would have in Canada or the US, where they go back and they have like maybe they don't have a computer system and they have to look it up and it's routine for them, and they have to log it and stuff like that. It's probably not the same procedures at all, right? So there's probably no reason for them to take it,
No, and they'll even, they will attempt to confiscate it. It happened to my wife in the past that they attempted, because she was sending a voice note while driving, or at least that's, you know, the way she puts it. And so they attempted to confiscate her license and to say, you know, no, you've got to show up to court now and you got to do. And she's like, come on, like, are you serious? Unless she
There's a
pays, you know, 500
negotiation.
pesos or something. And so he was like telling her, yeah, you're free to go, but I'm going to hold on to your license. And so the argument, of course, that she had was, no, you can't hold on to my license. What if there's a crash? What if there's an
Yes,
emergency? I need to have
exactly.
my license on me. So yeah, these guys are power tripping, you know, as they say. Like,
Yeah, it
yeah.
could be related to training. I know that they don't get paid very well, so they're trying to supplement their income in whatever way they can. Yeah, totally makes sense.
And that's it. It's tough because indeed there's a fine line. You need to have a strong police force in a country like Mexico to maintain order, you know, to keep the bad guys outside of the city, keep them off in the highways if you can, as we see in Monterey. But it's tough because you're going to hire a lot of bad guys, you know, if you're not having high standards of policing. But the budget's tight. I mean, how much can they it's
It's
wild.
institutional, yeah, it's foundational, that yeah, it's like it's really div it's a between a rock and a hard place, I guess we could say. Like, how are they supposed to build this force up with what they've got, including the resources? Yeah, totally makes sense. Yeah. So let me go back for a minute. When you originally came, originally, was it Monterey that you went to, and why specifically Monterey? I'm curious.
It was Monterey that I went to, and specifically Monterey, just I was just looking into opportunities to volunteer. I wanted something other than the beach. I had been to the Caribbean before, so I was like, yeah, I don't want to just go, party on the beach all the time. I was interested in the desert, and I was like, Monterey seems like a bit of a good mix. Like it's Americanized in many ways. Like you can get burgers and fries anywhere, kind of thing. There's McDonald's all over the place in Monterey.
The highways are quite wide, if I remember correctly. Like, everything is kind of, the distances are larger than in other places too. Everyone is using a car there, is from what I remember.
Monterey, it has a great highway system all around the city. I found it's very efficient. The laws of driving in Monterey are terrible. Maybe it's the same in Guadalajara, right? Like if there's like a small little choke, right? Like a small little bump,
Let's say, yeah,
then
fender bender, a little crash.
you stop, you close down the rest of the highway behind you pretty much, and you got to wait until the insurance arrives, and that could be hours,
Yeah,
especially
even for
now that
fender
you've built
benders, you
up
don't move the
traffic.
cars. Yeah, we've had that issue too. We've been in the car and we were just kind of in a lane, and I think somebody was in the lane and they were going the other way, and so they crossed in front of us and they actually hit us, right? But yeah, there were like four lanes and we weren't allowed to move, right? We weren't supposed to move.
No.
And we know that because that happened, and we moved the car so that, we could move the traffic along. And
Yeah.
then the insurance was like, well, there's nothing we can do now because you moved the cars.
It's a friggin' scam. It's like, and it makes things so much more dangerous because now you've got
Never
there
feel.
so much high, traffic building up, and everything compared to before it
There's
was
going to be more
flowing.
accidents. Yeah.
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 And
We
so.
call it rubbernecking, like when people are looking to see what happened and then they end up crashing into somebody else and causing yet another accident, right? Yeah. I think where I live in Guadalajara, there's some main arteries, of roads, and there's one that's called López Mateos is the name of the highway, and everyone calls it Choques Mateos because choque is like an accident, right? So it's like, yeah, you get one accident and there's like six lanes that are out of commission, for a while, but it's kind of the only road to go, in this major area. So
I
it's the
love that
same,
showcase,
yeah, it's the
Mateos.
same thing.
It's exactly it. Those are the things where it's like, I find, at least with Monterey, there's so much like billions of dollars of investment in the infrastructure, and they're killing it. They're doing a really good job expanding the subways, the highways, and everything. But this ridiculous law about the insurance,
It's
it's just,
insurance,
it
yeah.
makes it all for nothing. It's like you have to shut down like half the highways in the city anyway. Whereas here in Calgary, they even say on the radio, if you have an accident, get to the side of the road.
Make
It's
it
like a
safe,
public
yeah, you
service
need to go
announcement
for it.
that pops up. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember in the US too, it was the same. Well, one thing you mentioned, maybe we can circle around to, is you were mentioning like insurance and laws and things like that. And one thing that I've found here is like, wow, the medical insurance area, let's say, is so much better, at least than what I was used to in the US. I don't think it's the same for you in Canada because you've got a whole different system. But since your wife is a doctor, maybe you've noticed some things between the two places that are of interest.
So the private hospitals in Mexico are friggin' hotels, right? Oof,
Fantastic.
like,
No kidding.
don't kick
I
me
had
out.
stained
Like,
glass
I think
windows
I'm
in a
still
hotel.
in
In a
pain
hotel.
doc.
I mean, yes. When I was getting my, I got hit by a car, actually. I was riding my bike, got hit by a car,
Oh,
and
God.
I had to have surgery on my knee. Yeah, I tore my ACL, kind of broke the cartilage, and then I ended up going to a hospital. I had a stained glass window in my hospital room, right? And they have balconies and gardens and things like that. And like, yeah, private hospitals here are fantastic, I
Oh,
would
yeah.
say.
No, I had a cut on my toe once, and they're talking about getting a plastic surgeon in there. And I'm like, no, don't worry about it. Like, we don't need a plastic surgeon here. But, like, I didn't know how much my insurance would cover. I don't need a new toe. But, it's the private hotel is absolutely top notch. The
I think it was
company.
private hospital.
Oh,
You just said
right.
private
Yeah.
hotel.
Hospitals. Ah, yeah.
Nice.
The public ones, I wouldn't want to take my dog there, is what I find. Like, they're understaffed. They get the kind of lower level doctors quite often. Like, just not to say that they're uneducated, they're doctors. But the people who are like not the most experienced ones, like the more experienced ones open their own practice, or they're too busy to be the doctor that's seeing you for most things. Yeah, or else they're undersupplied. When we were out in the desert, so no supplies. It was ridiculous.
Oh, I bet.
Here in Canada, we have an issue right now. Just Canada has such high standards, and it's tough for doctors to come in and get their career going in Canada. So Canada has n recently started to actually open that up a little bit, which is really good because finally we can get these doctors working. It's not like the human body is different, if you're coming from Spain or India, like these are still people. Now Canada's opening it up for more doctors to get into practice, which is awesome.
I think
And
nurses too, because I have a friend who that's what his work was contracting between hospitals around the world and nursing staff, like in Mexico, so that they could get their staffing needs met and things like that. Because I think, yeah, I think it's in a lot of places too, and we've got aging populations in many places with what we call bare tree limbs, right? So there's not a lot of, they didn't have kids, and so they don't have grandkids, so there's not a lot of people to take care of these older people. And then that on top of it, the fact that you don't have enough nursing and medical staff, so they are importing a lot of people from a lot of places to try to meet those needs. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, exactly. It means, yeah, great opportunities, of course, for people coming from those countries who can get into
Exactly.
that. So at the moment, Canada's healthcare system, it depends on the province, but it seems like they'll only treat you if you're about to die, kind of. Like, yeah, like for example, my dad has shoulder problems, but they just tell him, walk it off. Like, nothing there, we can't really help you. If he wants to get it fixed, he could potentially get it fixed in Mexico. Like, he could go to a private hospital down there. Who knows what it would cost? But you can definitely find, Mexican specialists who will do a great job, because they'll even have like American level, education and stuff like that. Or they've even worked in the United States. So,
Exactly.
yeah, exactly. That's where I would say, anyway, just to summarize it all, it's like if you need a specialty thing taken care of, a shoulder for your knees or something like that, a lot of great Mexican doctors can take care of it, and the Canada won't even look at you, pretty much.
Oh,
They won't even give you
yeah.
a chance.
Another thing I find here that I'm really grateful for is getting blood drawn. I don't know if this is the case for you in Canada, but especially we were talking about private hospitals versus government hospitals here in Mexico. Well, in the government hospitals, right, the people who are drawing blood, they see so many cases a day. They get so much practice in putting in the needle and drawing the blood and making it quick and fast that it's so smooth. It's so easy. But yet when I go to a private practice, there it's more expensive, so they don't get the practice as much. They're poking around my arm and like trying to find a vein, telling me I've got no blood in that arm or something. And it's just crazy. But it reminded me of when I was in the US too, several times when I've had my blood drawn, they have a hard time kind of like just with that very simple procedure, to stick in an IV. I don't know if that was your experience here, but getting blood drawn here is kind of it's kind of a dream. For me, like to get it done, because I need panels done every what 3 months for my autoimmune disease. So I'm getting this done quite often. I can just look at somebody and be like, oh, this is gonna be good. She's gonna know exactly how to put that needle in. So that would be another thing where I'd say, like, if you happen to be down here, one really nice thing is the availability of getting just a full panel workup. You can walk down the street and there's plenty of centers where they'll, test pretty much anything you want to test here. And that is not the case of where I'm from in the US. I don't know if that's true in Canada too, but do they have those same kind of centers?
I'm sure that there are labs. You can certainly go to a walk-in clinic and request any tests from a doctor. But it definitely was interesting to me. Like in Mexico, my wife noticed I was, what was the issue? Was, oh no, I kept on getting like my blood pressure would drop and I would get dizzy and stuff like that. So she was like, yeah, we should get some blood tests done. And it was so quick and easy. It was like scheduled. 2 days later, went in and
Yeah.
did it, and like I had the results pretty quickly.
Yeah.
I think it was even the same day they gave me the results.
Yeah.
So
Usually it's
it
the same day. Yeah, you go in online and you tell them like which tests you want. You can just be a regular person. You don't need a prescription from a doctor, or you don't need to go through all the insurance. Even if you have insurance, you don't need it to just literally walk in off the street if you know what you need. And they kind of have like a menu of different places, and they're like, "Oh, are you diabetic? Get this panel of things. Oh, are you this? Get this panel." And they have regular checkups and things like that. That's something I really appreciate about the healthcare system here, is that you kind of feel, for me, I feel a little bit more empowered, by that, is to be at least able to check up on a few things myself, even if I'm not a doctor. It's easy enough to interpret whether those things are within limits. And then I can say, "Oh, I'd like to go to this specialist," or something like that. So that's something that I'm really thankful for here, but I didn't know how it worked in Canada. So it's very interesting, the systems.
now here it's just, I mean, understaffed, you could say, but there's that's the trade-off, is for sure you're gonna get treatment. It's just you're not gonna get it in a very efficient way. Yeah.
And the healthcare systems all around the world vary so much. And if you move to any new place, it's a lot to kind of figure out and learn how to deal with, What's the insurance like, right? Is this something I can do off the street, or this or that? It's always different, I think, wherever you go. So yeah, totally different. What else have you noticed since you've been back in Canada? Like, I imagine driving is a bit different.
Much easier. That's very smooth. Yeah, no, driving is not stressful at all. I enjoy that. I've noticed that. I mean, I guess it's particularly being in Alberta. The steak here is very good quality steak. Like, Alberta's known in Canada for having high quality beef. So, I
Oh, I
mean,
didn't know that.
that's even though Monterey does have a lot, like, that's one of the specialties of the city, is carne asada, is how they do all the beef and stuff. Like, everywhere does it. The quality of meat is so good here.
Oh, interesting. I wouldn't have thought that. Yeah, wouldn't have been something on my radar. So let's talk more about food then. Was there any food in Mexico that you really enjoyed that now you're maybe missing that you're in Canada?
Well, like, stuff like barbacoa and menudo are things that's like typical Sunday morning. We'd usually be getting one of the two. Like, it's like 50-50 between them. We can get both of them here. Like, there's a restaurant around the corner that sells menudo, and it's just kind of like $20 a bowl, kind of overpriced. So it's like, it's not great.
Little bit,
And there is a Chinese market as well where we can get menudo. Like, we can get the tripas, the tripe, and everything. I can get my hands on some menudo, and I know how to cook it. I've made it a
Oh,
few
nice.
times, so it's up to me to make it. And we've got a nice big pot, so really I could make some menudo. And then same thing with the barbacoa. I could go get a nice cow head again in this Chinese market. So stuff
I was gonna
like
say,
that.
I don't quite know how to describe barbacoa. So we said menudo, for people who are listening. Menudo is a soup. It's a brothy soup, and generally people have it for hangovers, like that's the tradition. And inside you have tripe, right? So you have innards, or offal, offal, right? You have how should we say, organ meat that's in there. And so it's a brothy soup with the organ meat, and I happen to like it.
What's
Some
typically like
Mexicans
stomach?
find it hefty, but yeah, exactly. So it's really something for, I think, Sunday mornings, you said, right? But barbacoa, I'm not sure how to describe that, because you mentioned it's the head of a cow, and what do they do with it?
So they boil it, or they steam it, until all the meat falls off, even the brain, the tongue, the eyes, everything. Mix it up, and then they'll divide it. So when you get barbacoa, you can either get the greasy stuff, and that's actually, it is healthier, but it's mixed in with the brain, the eyes, and all that.
Oh, yeah.
And then you can get the not greasy stuff, and that's just meat. And it's, it's a little bit drier, but it's, you pick your preference. I prefer the greasy stuff, honestly. It's so good with a coffee. Love that on Sunday mornings. So that's something I could get my hands on. I haven't attempted to yet, but I guess I probably will be doing it soon. And then there's other things, though, that, like, I started doing there. Like, I started eating bone marrow, like tuétano.
Oh, yes. I
Yeah.
love a good bone marrow tuétano. A
Oh,
good one is
yeah.
so good. Yeah, and it's so good for you too.
Exactly. I'm so happy to hear you eat it because so many people look at me weird when
Oh,
I'm like,
it's like one of my favorites. Are you kidding? Yeah, actually,
yeah.
do you? I'm sure you know, but for our listeners, they have these things called sopes, and sopes are little kind of corn, for lack of a better word, kind of pancakey shaped size things, and then inside you put some fillings. Well, I have a little restaurant right down by my house, and I usually go there once a week because they have the best bone marrow sopes, and I'll just get a couple of them, and that's like that cures
Wow.
what ails you. Every time, I have a headache, I go there. I have whatever, I just go there and I just feel so much better when I eat bone marrow,
Yeah, like it is, it's strong. You can have, I've found, you can only have so much of it. But how I do it is I get it like canoe cut, like para asar, laid
That's nice
out,
too.
and I pop that
You
in the
take the bone.
oven.
For people who don't see us moving our hands around, you take the let's say a long bone, let's say a leg bone, and you cut it lengthwise, and then you open it up, so you've got two little kind of canoe shapes, is what he means by when you by canoe over
Yep.
there.
There you go. And yeah, put that in the oven for it maybe 11 to 15 minutes or so.
Broil it, maybe,
Sometimes a
yeah.
little longer. And then yeah, I'll put on top of that just a little bit of apple cider vinegar. Fresh basil is really good on it.
Oh, nice. Let me
And
try that.
some like cracked salt and cracked
Oh,
pepper.
for sure.
And it's like, yeah, oh, it's so good. You can put it on a tortilla or in a gordita, whatever you like.
Yeah, whatever,
So
yeah.
good, yeah.
For people who've never tried bone marrow yet, so you can put it on some kind of grain, let's say. But if you're new to it, you might even just have like an arugula salad or something like that, and then just put a little couple dollops in there just to get a taste of it. You know what I mean? Just so that, because it's kind of strong and fatty, obviously. So maybe pairing it with something that's also quite strong, that might give you a sense of like what it really tastes like, because it's really good and it's really great for you.
And then after you can take the bone, and if you got a dog or a cat, you just give it to the dog or cat. And it's so good for them, especially as they start to get older for arthritis, for like their brain function, their cognitive function.
Yeah, totally.
So high in like everything, all the fat, stuff that they need. Oh, yeah.
Yes, and when you mentioned earlier, like, oh, the greasy stuff is actually better for you, I think, often, at least in Western culture, we demonize, so many different things, and everything's got a fad in terms of food and whatever, and like really the culprit is generally sugar, and simple
Yeah.
sugars. And when, yeah, have more fat in your diet, good fats, obviously, but yeah, like go for the bone marrow, go for the cut of fattier meat if you want. Like no reason to feel guilty about that stuff. I would try to cut out myself. I would cut out the carbs in the bread, especially for me, the gluten, way more than that. So for sure. So speaking of food then, what's it like in terms of, let's say, the shopping experience in Calgary versus Monterey? For example, did you ever go to like little shops that you miss, and now it's just kind of the big box experience there? I'm curious if you've noticed any differences within the shopping aspect of feeding yourself and your family.
Like between like Mexico and here? Yeah. No, you know what? For the last few years, I haven't like I guess no, like donuts, the pan dulce is what we would typically get.
Oh,
And that's
right.
something. Yeah, you can get donuts here, but they're way better in Mexico. Like all the sweet bread is so much better there. But most of the things, I mean, due to inflation, everything's like ridiculously expensive, except for steaks, which is interesting. Like I said, you can get great steak here for a really good price, and ground
That's very
beef.
interesting.
But a lot of food and milk and eggs and stuff like that, it's way more expensive here. But overall, yeah, I find like I used to in Mexico, I would do a lot of shopping just going to like the tiendita, just around the corner, a little
Corner
store,
store.
and I'd get mineral water, I'd get whatever, bread and eggs, like just a little bag of 10 eggs or something like that.
Yes, a bag of eggs. That was something that I didn't have the experience of in the US, but then I also used to live in Jordan. I don't know if you knew that. I used to live in Jordan, and there you could just go buy a single egg or three eggs if you like. And so I kind of knew the whole, you know, have a few eggs here and there thing, whereas in the U.S. generally you buy a dozen, right? Or like 18 or a 30 pack or something like that. Yeah, that was always weird because I was like, oh my God, I don't want to break the eggs in this little plastic bag. You know, and walk them home very, very carefully, you know, from there.
Yeah. And so that's where, yeah, exactly. I'd to like, it would probably would have been cheaper, honestly, to go to like a grocery store and get all that stuff. But I preferred going to just the local store just because that's where I'd chat with the guy a little bit, like, you know, just, hey, you know, hey, que mero or whatever. All this kind of awesome stuff that I'd learn just because I'd learned from talking to the locals. I never took a Spanish class. I was just walking around saying stuff to people.
And... Exactly, me too. Yeah. Yeah. And going to the corner store, that's one. Number one, it's a great place to practice language and learn language. And number two, socially, like those are what we call weak ties, right? So you've got your strong ties, you've got your friends, you've got your family, whoever. But the weak ties are I go down the street to buy chicken and this guy who's got like a, you know, mobile shack thing, and I go see him and he knows me, he knows how I like my chicken cut. And, you know, we chat about this and that. I know when he wins at his weekly soccer/football games and things like that. So it's people that you know out and about. And that's so important, you know, when you live in another place, is to create what we call weak ties, you know, with people. You've got your chicken lady, you mentioned the tiendita guys or whatever, the people who deliver water, because here you have water delivered in what we call a carboy, you know, or a garrafón in Spanish. And all these people, like, you know them, you know. And I think that's something that I never had as much experience with in the U.S. And maybe it's because I didn't do it, right? Maybe I just went to a big box store. But for me, that's one of the joys also of living here is creating all those little ties everywhere. You know what I mean?
Big time. I suppose that's something I miss because I'm not getting that here. Like I say, you know, if I go to the grocery store here, I can see the regulars who are, you know, working there full time. And so I say good morning, good afternoon, right, whatever. But I'm not chatting with them like I would have chatted with Javier at the store, kind of thing.
And, yes.
You know, just sit there, open up my pop, talk for a couple minutes. And yeah. And so that's something that community here is, there isn't such an emphasis on it. Exactly. Like people are seem kind of standoffish from one another.
Keep to themselves kind of thing. Yeah. Which is kind of ironic. I don't know if it's the same there, but like if I go back to Philadelphia, something I notice is walking down the street, everybody says hello, everyone says good morning. And I don't have that experience here in Mexico, right? Sometimes people say that as you pass them on the street. So it's a different way, I think, to get into seeing somebody, right? So here people aren't saying hello, good morning, everybody you pass. But on the other hand, you do have places like, you know, the guy at the corner store that you really get to know very well. And so it's a different dynamic, I feel like. You know what I mean?
Totally. Like in Monterey, I'd go out for a run in the morning and I'd say buen dia to everybody. And I would get maybe a 20% response rate, you know, kind of.
Return rate.
Yeah, exactly. Most people would, I guess maybe, you know, a lot of people have earbuds in or something. But most people wouldn't say anything back. But then here, it's definitely, it's more like a 60-70% response rate.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Especially if you're the one who initiates, you know, I feel like.
Yeah, exactly. And I try to always, like, it's just something I've always done. Just look people in the eye, tell them good morning. And I think culturally, I'm starting to see in some cultures, they think it's weird, I believe, just because it's so multicultural, this city. Maybe they don't think it's weird, but I notice, like, a lot of people will just ignore me and keep walking past. But then other cultures, like Indian people, for example, seem to always respond. Maybe not always, but they see, I don't know, it's just something I've noticed. Like Indian people noticed, are more frequently saying good morning back. You know, you get a bit of a mix, and this is where Calgary's interesting, yeah.
Uh-huh, because a lot of times we'll chat about how do you make friends, right, in different cultures, and on what level is that kind of a superficial friendship? And on what level, when do you know you're somebody's good friend? And what does that kind of mean? And that varies so much, you know, between cultures. And it goes all the way down, I think, to what we're talking about is like, even just how do you say hello? When do you say hello? When is it kind of appropriate or acceptable? Or when is it creepy and weird? And like, do I want to answer this person? You know, how did they say hello to me? Or they're like, hey, baby, you know, or was it like, oh, good morning, you know, and did they look you in the eye? A lot of these things can be things we don't even think about and talking about culture and things like that. So I wanted to get you on today to talk about, your experiences, because I feel like you have fresh eyes since you kind of just moved back to Canada. You had been in Mexico for a while, like me, several years. And so I wanted to pick your brain a little bit before it becomes too late and before you kind of go back to just like not even thinking about the little things. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, that's very true. Yeah, be able to see what's fresh, what am I experiencing, currently. And yeah, no, it's definitely an interesting experience getting back here. I'm having a lot of fun and I'm excited just to see what comes next. I mean, it's got like Canada has for raising kids has some major advantages, definitely like security-wise and pollution-wise, stuff like that. But then at the same time, the cultural experience here, it's not like Mexico, where as soon as you wake up, if you open up your window, you're hearing like, trumpets, trumpet music or an accordion or something cool, cumbia. Like there's the culture there is nonstop. It's like constantly running. Whereas here, I don't know, it's a little more bland, it's a
Yeah, it's
little
a
bit
different rhythm, it's a
more.
different pace.
It's a different pace, and it's kind of there are things about like life and culture here that like it's so multicultural that there isn't kind of at least it doesn't appear that there's like one set way of living. And maybe it's just the time that I'm moving into Calgary. Just there's been a huge immigration, like, a lot of immigration over the last 5 years. But that's what I'm seeing, that's what I'm feeling, because I'm new to Calgary. I'm from Toronto myself.
So for you, it's a little like slightly different, right? But we can say like, I mean, if you exclude like the French speaking part of Canada, I feel like there's a lot of Canada where I from the outside wouldn't notice a lot of differences like you might, but going from Toronto to Calgary, have you noticed a lot of like cultural differences?
Well, some cool things. I mean, cowboy hats are in style here. So
Oh,
that's one thing.
interesting.
Oh yeah, leather cowboy hats. That's the way that people are.
And the ranching lifestyle, I think, there, if beef is such a big thing.
I'll bet that there is. I haven't been outside of the city all that much, just a little bit. But out here, there's more of an outdoorsy lifestyle. Everybody seems to be getting off to the mountains, like just escaping out to the mountains as much as possible. Because, like, well, I can't see them from here, but like the Rocky Mountains are just an hour's drive away. And you can see them from, if I go out to, wherever around here, I can definitely see them. There's things like that. People here seem to be more into nature, whereas people in Toronto seem to be very locked in,
City.
city kind of thinking, hustle and bustle sort of thing. Yeah, I'll notice, like, when I go for a run here, a lot of people walking to work, where I know that they could have taken a bus kind of thing, but they're walking. Or I mean, they're walking towards the city. I assume that they're walking to work, but they could have taken a bus like very easily. I know that they could have. That's something I really like. It's like it seems like people kind of stop to smell the flowers a little more here.
And also, you mentioned earlier time of year, right? So I'm from upstate New York, and right now we're recording this at end of June, and this is the perfect time to be doing all those things. And kind of like, I remember growing up in the Northeast, and you really had to like take advantage of each season, right? Summer is the time to do this, and then fall is the time to do this. And there's a very marked difference. And so the pace of life is very different. Whereas I don't know how it is in Monterrey, but in Guadalajara, they call it the city of eternal springtime because to me, like as an outsider, like it's the same every day, right? It's warm and in it's hot during a certain part of the day, and then the nights kind of cool off. And yes, we have a rainy season, and everyone here is like, oh, we have very different seasons. Like, I'm from the outside. No, you don't, right? It all feels very similar. So I have a hard time tracking throughout the year. I'm like, is this Easter? Are we coming up on Christmas? Like, for me, it's really similar, the climate, whereas I grew up with very like marked, seasons. I don't know if you had that same experience when you were growing up.
Oh yeah, oh 100%. I mean, especially growing up in like kind of central Ontario area, it's like yeah, winter is very heavy and then the summer is like humid and hot, like 35 degrees Celsius. And so yeah, you get out skiing, you enjoy just as you say, yeah, depending on the season, you're doing whatever it is and you're enjoying it to the max. Like and that's something that in Monterey I missed was the change of seasons because it was just spring and summer, and then for December, January, February, it's a little chilly, kind of. Like it would get as low as 0 degrees Celsius for a couple of days, but it would mostly just be chilly and windy and rainy kind of thing. But most of, 9 months of the year, you're getting sun and it's like 30 degree, 25 plus
Not
most
just
days.
sun, yeah, beating down on you, sun. I've been to Monterey. I was like, it was hard to handle for me.
Yeah. And that's where I would feel weird every year, because it would be, I remember every year around the end of September, I'd look at my calendar and I'd be like, oh my God, it's like September 25th and it feels like the middle of July kind of thing.
Very different. Yeah.
Yeah, like
Yeah,
the leaves
that's a
aren't
good point.
changing
It's like
color. There's, there's no, you don't get that smell like, or the crunch when you walk out on the leaves on the ground, or the smell of the freshly fallen leaves. Or else, again, also the smell after all the snow melts, when you get that fresh smell of dirt and pollen, kind of the first time stepping out at the end of the winter. Yeah, you don't get that. And so those were things that, oh yeah, I may regret saying it exactly, just because I know Calgary, it starts snowing in September, August, kind of thing here. But
We'll
the
check back in. We'll check back in around what, November to see how the weather is going there.
yeah.
Yes. Let's say until then, how can people find you and what kinds of things are you running right now? Like I know you got back. I can see your office is set up. You've got your mic. Like you're good to go. So how can people find you and what are you doing that they can work with you these days?
Well, no, thank you for asking. So I've got Instagram at the Accent Training Podcast, and same thing on YouTube, Spotify with my own podcast. And I've started on school.com an accent training community.
With a K, school with a K,
S,
right? School for
that's
people who
correct.
don't know.
SK.
We'll put the link down in the show notes for that too. And you said it's more of a community thing, right?
So yeah, there I'm offering group training, where I've got a few weeks of video course content on there, fundamental stuff like about patterns of intonation and syllable stress, and just some of the basic things that you could start to grasp just to really get the wheels turning to make it easier so that you're not trying to chase around every individual sound constantly. 'Cause that's where a lot of people get, they lose their momentum, they get frustrated with a
They
couple of
bog
sounds that
down
they
and
can't get, and then they feel like, I'll never do this. But it's like, if you start with some of the things behind the sounds, like the
The
rhythm,
macro, exactly, the music.
yeah, and even just the how you're projecting your voice and how you soften your mouth muscles and you put the voice down in the belly. Those are the things that we work on like every session. And then also we do get into the sounds. We work on high priority, whether it's connecting speech, or we just did, I think, about 5 sessions covering the R from all these different angles, whether it's an R before vowel connecting speech or R after vowels, and all these different ways to go about it. So the R is a big topic, right? Like that one, high priority. Everybody wants it, but very difficult. So we got right into all the nitty-gritty details of it. It was awesome. But
Oh, fabulous. So school, SKOOL, is a community platform for learning. So what does that look like for people? Is it a membership? Is it like you buy the course and then during the time of the course you have classes? Like if I'm a person and I want to get in on your stuff, what would that look like for me?
yeah, getting into school, I've got a one-time payment. It is a premium membership, but one-time payment, $75, and you're in. And I'm not gonna bug you for, no more invoices. Just the one. What you've got with that is access to our weekly live trainings. That's where I'm in there. I'm showing you my materials that I teach my one-on-one clients with. And we take mostly a corporate context focus on things. So you're not going to learn about English for the airport here, but we are going to practice the pronunciation of key words so that you've got smooth communication in an office setting, right? So that's business English, not grammar lessons, but the vocab. And we get it, we work that stuff out. So yeah, to be clear, it's like we've got a few weeks of video lessons. But not to overwhelm it with video lessons, the main focus is the weekly trainings. That's where I get in. I'm able to give. We've got small groups so far. I'm talking 5 to 10 people. So it's like pretty easy to give people feedback so far. And also I'm providing the materials and a training plan every week so that between sessions, people know what to do. Like, here's a task. It's going to move you forward. Complete that. Mm-hmm. And then you're, you know, good for the day.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Oh, that's all. That's huge then. Because yeah, doing, I mean, I can attest doing a podcast, doing YouTube videos. That's one thing. That's production. That's getting out your weekly or your biweekly or your monthly product, right? For people. But to me, the heart of all of this stuff, it's community, right? And building community. And that's where I do mine on Discord. And we do the same thing. It's like when you show up, that is the most valuable thing you can do. When you're there in person, like, you're going to learn, you're going to remember everything, right? Yes, there's videos. There's plenty of videos out there. And we can even provide better videos, let's say. But be there. You know what I mean? So I would say, yeah, to anybody doing that. And that's nothing, right? $75 for this premium membership to get attention from an expert. You know, that's amazing. So good for you. I'm really glad you started that. That's awesome. And we'll put the link down there in the show notes. So hopefully, yeah, hopefully you guys can catch Patrick on school. As always, Patrick, it's so good to talk to you. And I want to thank you so much for agreeing to see me today to talk about all this. And yeah, let's get back in touch like in the late fall and let's maybe talk about seasonal changes and things, you know, things that you're noticing then too, because I think something that we often miss as like accent coaches is how culture comes into things, you know, and how culture makes us think about things and how that translates to how we communicate, you know, and connect to people. So it's been a lot of fun talking to you today. Thanks a lot.
Oh, I've had a blast. Oh, thank you for having me. I'm so happy to have had the chance to come on. Yeah.
As always. So we'll say goodbye for today and we'll say see you in a few months, everybody.
Absolutely.
Bye, guys. See you soon. Thanks a lot. Thanks, everybody, for listening all the way to the end. As you know, I like to like share a little bit about what's going on in my life. And at the time of recording, this is June, end of June 2025. And I've been doing a lot of housework in terms of little projects here and there. Well, I was up on a ladder and I had my right hand was using a screwdriver and my left hand was kind of crossed over. And I was kind of in a weird position and I pulled a muscle in my arm, in my shoulder, and I was down for the count for like 3 days, and just the pain of that was making me tired and everything. And I thought, oh, well, my birthday's in like a week and I'm not getting any younger. I wonder if this is what it's like when people say, well, you're getting old now, you know, you're old when ... And I was like, oh, is this one of those things that people say? Because I've never had, you know, a pulled muscle from doing something so simple and then have it hurt so much. So I was like, oh. And then another thing, as Patrick and I were talking, is that we were talking about licenses and I realized, oh, I've got to renew my license because it's almost my birthday and it'll be the first time I'm renewing my license here in Mexico. So I will let you know how that goes. I think it's going to be a lot of standing in line, a lot of misunderstanding paperwork, but we'll see. So I'll let you know about that. My birthday is next week. Wish me a happy birthday. I know that this episode won't come out until fall, but you can wish me a belated happy birthday. And in the meantime, if you have any specific ideas about accents or pronunciation topics that you'd like to hear about, let me know and I'll try to make it a reality. So hopefully I will see you in the next episode. Bye, guys.